see successful projects and see that community be successful, be see that it's sustainable, and you know, we're not just loaning money on an unsuccessful project. So
hello and welcome to episode 49 of Rural Matters, the leading podcast on rural education, health, and business in the United States. I'm your host, Michelle Rathman, and when I'm not doing this program, you can find me working with rural health organizations and speaking around the country on rural health leadership, quality, stakeholder engagement, and of course, strategies to address hospital closures, which we know is a pretty critical issue for us today. And I want to thank all of our listeners for your continued support of these important conversations, and you are helping us get closer to our goal of 25,000 downloads with this very episode. Now, if you're new to the program, you'll be interested to know that the goal of Rural Matters is to provide a broad perspective of what's happening on the ground in rural communities. So we're talking about everything from rural policies, the various issues affecting rural workforce, and the challenges of shrinking education and healthcare resources, inequities in broadband, connectivity, housing, and so much more. In every episode, we aim to explore what's not working, but more importantly, provide relevant examples of how rural communities and regions are overcoming their challenges, innovating and providing promise to the estimated 57 million people in rural America today. Now, today's topic is an important one for so many reasons. And to help tee up this conversation, I want to read a quote from Senator Martin Heinrich, who is the ranking member of the Joint Economic Committee, whose primary focus is to tackle the issues that rural communities are facing today, many of the ones I just mentioned to you. So in June of 2018, the committee released a report detailing many of the economic challenges facing rural America, along with proposed solutions, which of course is so important. Senator Heinrich said, and this is a quote from him, "Expanding economic opportunities for rural Americans is vital to the strength of our economy as a whole. Our report does not shy away from some very tough facts. Many rural communities are still recovering from the Great Recession over a decade after it hit us. Millions of rural residents lack reliable access to broadband. The rural population is aging, is shrinking, and wages have been stagnant for far too long. We cannot ignore these challenges. We have to tackle them head on." So today, to help tackle this particular subject, which is partially access to capital in rural America, I'm so pleased to welcome Thomas Kimsey. Now, Thomas is the president and CEO of Thomas USAF Group, LLC. And Thomas started with the company in 1990 and currently manages and oversees more than $100 million in loan origination and underwriting annually with over 28 years of SBA and USDA lending experience. Thomas has established his nationwide industry footprint and has closed a multitude of loans in various industries with a heavy concentration in the hospitality and healthcare sectors. So Thomas excels by working directly with business owners, partner banks, and the SBA, USDA, allowing him to effectively manage the loan process from start to finish. It should be known that he is recognized by his associates for his leadership skills, his involvement in the community, and his passion and determination to provide access to capital in rural America. With that said, Thomas, welcome so much to Rural Matters. We so appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Michelle. It's great to be with you this morning, and certainly great to talk about providing access to capital in rural America, which is so critical. And as you mentioned, you know, rural America continues to struggle, and that's what we do here at Thomas USAF. We help these rural communities rebuild and provide financing that they so desperately need, that we can help end out-migration in these rural communities and keep the people there with good jobs and good solid communities.
I so appreciate you using the word out-migration, because so often we use that term in healthcare, you know, when we see patients leaving their primary service area and going somewhere else. And so much of that is driven today, as we know, by hospital closures. And we're not just going to focus on that. But Thomas, could you just kind of give us a lay of the land of what lending is like to rural communities today? Because I know I worked on big capital projects, you know, over a decade ago, and it seemed like there was a lot of money flowing from more commercial lenders, if you will. And I know that some of that has changed. So why don't you just kind of give us a brief history of where it was, where it is, and if you could put your crystal ball in front of you and where you think it's going in the future. So just give us a little bit of lay of the land, if you will.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, as I mentioned, for rural America, you know, access to capital is tough. And, you know, in our space that I operate in, the USDA government guaranteed loan programs, as well as the SBA guaranteed loan program. But primarily, I want to talk about the USDA community facilities direct loan program and guaranteed loan program.
Okay.
That serves rural America in these communities of less than 20,000 population, because typically you're not going to have the conventional, the big bank lenders going to these communities. And as we've seen in a lot of communities in rural areas, the banks are closing. They have no banks. And with these USDA rural development loan programs, we can go in and provide access to capital. We can provide long-term permanent financing up to 40 years with the community facility direct and guaranteed loan programs. And that's hard to get. I mean, they're not, I don't know of any conventional loans that you can get up to 40 years specifically, you know, to help rebuild and provide the infrastructure they need in these communities. And with the community facility program, you know, we are talking about providing capital to nonprofits, public bodies. That's what it's geared for, is these nonprofits as well.
So am I to understand, and you correct me if I have this wrong, the USDA, they this year, between last year and this year, they had about $2 billion to invest in rural communities. Is that figure correct?
Sure. So the community facility program, the direct loan program, had about $2.8
billion
to invest. And then their guaranteed loan programs, a little less than $150 million for those two programs. And then the business and industry guaranteed loan program, which is for businesses, and you can do nonprofits under it as well. It's about a $1 billion program.
So what is the difference between, you know, and I think I'm not a finance person. I know that obviously when you borrow money from a bank, their goal is to obviously make money off that loan. And so it would seem to me that the USDA, you know, clearly they're not doing this, you know, with the same motivation. Could you give us just a bit of your kind of your insight as to what the difference of traditional bank lending and the USDA and their mission? What's different between the two?
Sure. You know, with the USDA, you know, the mission is to provide access to capital to rural America. So that's that's the key difference than conventional financing, where, you know, most lenders are not looking to lend in rural America. You know, for us, you know, that is where we look to. We like rural America. I grew up in rural America. I understand rural America. Mm-hmm. So that's a big difference. I mean, most lenders, and I'm, you know, I know there's some that are maybe listening that obviously cater, but that's what we do. We cater to rural America, and that's what the USDA Rural Development Program is catering to rural America, unlike, you know, your traditional lenders that are looking for your more urban areas. And that's why this program is so essential for our rural communities, because that's who it's catering to.
So what are some examples of the essential community facilities that you are aware of and that your organization has had a hand in helping to lift up and break ground and see the project through? What do those look like?
And one thing I wanted to say, you know, under the community facility program, that it does have to be an essential, you know, community facility, which is defined as a facility that provides essential services to that community. That's a key point for this loan program. But a couple of examples of loans that we've worked on specifically, it's been hospitals. We worked on one out in the Nevada area outside of Las Vegas. Was a critical access hospital where we were able to go in and provide them with some additional financing to help refinance some debt, as well as provide new equipment that they needed, and to build out a new medical office building that they were looking to do to serve that community. Another example was a rural hospital here in Georgia that was developing a geri psych unit, an adult geri psych unit that they needed desperately in this rural community, because there is no facility in this rural area. And so we were able to provide a USDA loans, community facility loan, to build a 10-bed geri psych unit that served that community in that rural area. both these examples, you know, the one in Nevada and here in Georgia, provided, you know, that capital that wasn't otherwise available through the USDA Community Facility Program.
So what about, you know, such things as infrastructure and education and cultural facilities? Are those the kinds of projects that are eligible for this kind of funding?
Absolutely. You know, under the Community Facility Program, you can basically build a community, you know, from your hospitals to your rural clinics, your schools that you mentioned. You can do public schools, charter schools, private schools, as well as libraries and colleges. And we can also look at the, you know, public safety side of it with the, you know, police departments, fire departments, you know, correctional facilities, as well as public works. As well as, you know, if the municipality needs, you know, maybe they need a new municipal building or a town hall or a courthouse, we can do those.
Wow.
So there are a whole host of things that can be done on the Community Facility Program.
You know, so when we talk so much about rural economic development, you know, obviously it doesn't happen in a bubble, and you know, we're not looking at building these big factories, if you will, because who is interested in building a rural community than those who live there? And just the projects that you talk about, it seems so exciting. And I would imagine that just not that easy to say, hey, I fill out a few documents and then here away we go, we get a couple million dollars. So can you tell us a little bit about the process? I mean, how do you interface with USDA? How does somebody start? How does a mayor of a community or a town council, you know, where do some of these projects originate? Where do you even begin the process?
Sure. Well, most communities, most nonprofits or communities, they probably call their local USDA office there in each state. Each state has their own rural development office to begin that discussion of how they can access the program and the capital through the Community Facility Program. That's probably the start of it. I mean, for us being in this space, I mean, we do work with a lot of communities and people know us as experts, but generally it starts with that USDA office discussing, you know, how they can utilize the program. But it is, you know, it is an extensive process. It is government guaranteed financing. So there certainly is a lot that goes into the process, and it does take a fair amount of time to process the paperwork, look at the process, and look at the specific project. Does it work? Does it qualify? Is it eligible under the program? And probably the first thing that most want to do is just to complete a pre-application with the USDA. And that's pretty simple, just providing some basic background information on the nonprofit or public body that may be looking to do it. And you can get a pretty good idea real quick if it meets the qualifications and eligibility process from that standpoint.
So we're going to take a break in just a moment, but when we come back, I do want to talk to you about a couple of things. And one of them will be, and I want you to think about this, is, you know, once you build a project, it's so important for it to succeed and to be able to pay back that loan. And I'm really curious about the kind of insight that you have and the kind of, if you will, coaching or the kind of counsel that you provide to those that you help in terms of what happens after they build and making sure that they stay viable and successful. But I also want you to talk to us a little bit about a subject that I hear a lot, which is the funding available to help restructure debt. And you mentioned that just a moment ago. So I'd like to talk about that as well. And then I also want to talk to you about something I read about, which I didn't realize you guys were involved with until I read into this more, is the National Rural Lenders Roundtable. I would imagine that is a pretty robust group of professionals who are also committed to reinvestment in rural. So we'll talk about that as well. So hang tight with us for just a moment, because at this point, I do want to take a short break to acknowledge our sponsors for today's episode. Of course, first, we are very pleased to have support from Thomas USAF. On December 4th, Thomas USAF is sponsoring the 20th annual National Rural Lenders Roundtable in Washington, D.C. The event will feature some of the most active lenders and brokers in the Southeast in the SBA and USDA guaranteed lending industries. Now, there is no charge to attend. More details, including the agenda and speakers, can be found on the Roundtable website, which is www.nrl.org. NRLRT.com. And we also appreciate having support from Rural Assembly, which is holding its first Women's Summit this fall. You've heard us talk about this the past few episodes. Rural women are leaders, organizers, creators, and caregivers on the front lines of social change. We often refer to women as the backbone of our communities, yet we know rural women are also more likely to experience the trauma of inequities across all measures of health, economic security, access to power, and safety. On October 28th and 29th, the Rural Assembly will convene its first Rural Women's Summit in Greensville, South Carolina, to explore more deeply how we talk about women's leadership and the roles agents and their roles as agents of change. Now, across this 2 days of programming, we'll consider how rural women's leadership is supported and, of course, how it's thwarted. And we'll also name ways rural women are building power for more just and equitable solutions. And we'll honor the diverse stories and experiences of rural women from communities of color. The Rural Women's Summit is open to all advocates committed to building a more just and inclusive nation. Now, of course, there are potentially a limited number of need-based scholarships still available to help cover costs for attendees. So if you want to register and learn more about how you can join our growing movement, I will be there doing an episode of Rural Matters. We invite you to go to ruralassembly.org for all those details. And finally, I do want to also acknowledge that this episode is being sponsored by For the Win Robotics. For the Win Robotics is dedicated to promoting STEM through the use of drones in schools. Their drone program explores the STEM principles behind drones and their use in society. Students work through curriculum, activities, and quizzes to gain a well-rounded perspective on this emerging new technology. And you can find out more about them at FTW-robotics.com. All right, so now let's get back to our discussion with Thomas. You know, Thomas, before I acknowledge our sponsors, I just asked you a little bit about, you know, the USDA lending program and your interface with them and you ushering capital, access to capital to rural communities. And sometimes it's not bricks and mortar. Sometimes there is a need for help in restructuring debt. And I actually happened to work with a hospital for years that borrowed $40 million, and they were just not able to meet that debt service. And they actually end up being able to restructure that debt under USDA. And I know we talked earlier about the hospital crisis and, you know, those who are struggling to stay afloat. Could you talk to us a little bit about how the work that you do and the programs that you work with potentially can help mitigate some of this risk by restructuring debt? Is that possible?
Absolutely. So first of all, under the community facility program, currently the refinancing of debt is limited to 50% of the total loan or total project, total loan, actually. There is provision in the farm bill specifically for hospitals to allow additional refinance of debt. That language there that Congress put in, the USDA is currently working on putting in guidelines that we'll have in place. So we'll know specifically what the agency is looking for and what qualifies to be able to refinance. So under that farm bill provision, the hospital will be able to refinance 100% of their debt, where now the current rules limit it to 50% of the total loan. We're waiting on those guidelines right now. I'm hoping they'll have those in place soon so we can help, you know, the rural hospitals, you know, if they need to restructure debt. The key is, and as you know, Michelle, I mean, it's tough for rural hospitals. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Congress put that in the Farm Bill so we could help them provide this long-term permanent financing, as I indicated, up to 40 years. The direct loan program, the interest rate is just went down to, I believe, around 3 1/8. That's fixed for 40 years. So that's really an incredible rate right now.
Right.
For the communities. But it's a tough area when you get into refinancing debt and working with the hospitals that ones that fit and don't fit. And it's something that I think the agency recognizes, and that's why they're putting in some guidelines that we can operate under to provide these funds.
So when you work, you know, there's a lot of bad news out there when we talk about rural healthcare in particular, and we know that, you know, rural hospitals are, and we've talked about this a lot in this program, they're oftentimes the largest employer. And so we've got a lot of kind of sad stories out there about hospitals that are closing, but what you're involved with is the exciting part, which is building something new in a lot of cases. And so I wonder from your perspective, since you've been around this space for a long time, what does it do to the community energy, to the community spirit when you break ground and you see a new facility go up, whether it's education, whether it's a hospital, whether it's some of the other projects? How do you kind of measure how that revitalizes and kind of kickstarts a community spirit again? What have you seen?
No, I mean, it has a tremendous impact. I mean, I can give you an example of just for me personally, where, you know, the small community I grew up in rural North Georgia, where, you know, the 2-year community college became a 4-year, you know, college with the help of the USDA community facility loan, where it was able to, you know, build out that facility, that campus. And, you know, it just has such a, it just revitalizes the community. It has excitement that, you know, the government's helping. We're helping the community grow and keep people and provide education as well. And it's just it's a good feeling. I mean, I have to tell you, it's really, you know, it's what I do, but it's also exciting to see these communities when you can go in and you're there to help them with the different projects they need to make their communities vibrant. That they, you know, because they see urban areas, and urban areas have tremendous capital. But as I said in the beginning, you know, access to capital in rural America is tough. So when you go in and you're willing to help and you're able to close that loan, it's really a nice feeling to see these communities grow and provide jobs and training and things that really help these communities.
You know, I've often wondered, you know, I've had a few conversations in the circles that I travel with some representatives from USDA and also conversely, those who are just really focused on, you know, lending and making a good profit margin and so forth. And one of the things I know to be true is that there's got to be a lot of really involved people in the process because, you know, typically if you think banks, you look at numbers, you look at the bottom line, you look at projected growth, you look at service market share and so forth and so on. But what I'm interested in from your perspective is the kind of, again, going kind of back to the coaching, if you will, and the counsel to your clients and talking about all the hands of the village that need to touch the project. And so do you take a look at and how do you advise those when they're, you know, going after this kind of funding, just in terms of their bigger strategic plan, their bigger community involvement, their stakeholder engagement plan? What are some of the things that your organization does to help a community or a particular entity in a community prepare for not just the excitement of the building, but the sustainability piece? And I think that's something that is maybe often lost in the conversation because if you build it, they won't necessarily come, right? So what's involved from your end in helping to ensure that those appropriate pieces are in place?
No, I mean, obviously we want to have sustainable projects. You know, this is a lending program and we want to see successful projects and see that community be successful, see that it's sustainable and that, you know, we're not just loaning money on an unsuccessful project. So, you know, part of our process and sitting down with the nonprofit or the public body is to assist them to make those right decisions and make sure that it will work for that community because they're, you know, putting at stake, you know, it could be tax dollars or what have you. But so we work with them, you know, looking at, you know, the financial viability and we do that through, you know, feasibility studies and having other meetings and reviewing those financials to make sure that it can be successful and it's not a drain on the community, but it will be a true success for generations. And so we spend a lot of time. I mean, there are hundreds of hours that goes into this process of the USDA loan. And we meet with them and we continue to work with them through the process from start to finish until the end. And we're here, you know, when the project's done as well, if they do need additional support and help. But the objective, obviously, is to make sure we're doing successful projects for these communities.
And so I would imagine, you know, U.S., every state is different, right? So you're working in Alabama and Georgia and in Nevada, you mentioned as well. So in terms of just policies, maybe not so much regulations, but from state to state. So you have to be really well-versed on what the policies and regulations are. But what are some of the differential and conflicts that you see overall in this industry that, you know, could help make it less complicated to have more access to capital? What's your perspective on that?
No, I mean, I think those are conversations that, you know, we're always looking and working with the USDA National Office in DC. How do we make the program more efficient, make things flow better? And, you know, we certainly have a good relationship with the National Office, and you know, our conversations are good about how can we make things better, because I said, you know, it is complicated. It's a big process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things the USDA is doing, they're working on a 1RD program that will combine the USDA community facility, the VNI program and the WELP program into one. And part of that is to make things more streamlined, more efficient. And so we're excited to see that they're taking the initiative under the Secretary's leadership to improve the program and to make things more consistent from state to state, because we do operate in all 50 states in the U.S. territories. And, you know, sometimes things are inconsistent. But, you know, this 1RD rule, I believe, will benefit all of us in rural America to make the programs more efficient and make them flow better. And, you know, I'm excited about it. I'm excited that, you know, to have the opportunities, because I'll be going to DC next week and we'll probably be having these same discussions. So it's good that to have a good open communication up there.
So on your way to DC, you know, as you think about it, are there some particular industries that you see that the USDA is currently not lending to that maybe you would encourage them to consider? I wonder.
Well, that's one of the industries. They cover so many industries. I mean, it's a lot to cover there. But, you know, one of the things that, and again, this is in the Farm Bill, is probably the hemp. You know, that's something, a lot of calls about. And there's some language in the Farm Bill. They're trying to, again, to work on the guidelines for that. But I think that's an area I get a lot of, or not a lot, but, you know, that seems to be a big discussion item. But right now, I think they're doing a pretty good job covering most things that we need to cover. But, you know, we're always having that communication about how we can look at other areas that may need assistance in rural America.
So now the roundtable, I want to talk about that before we close out. So it's the National Rural Lenders Roundtable. Well, how did that start? I mentioned that the founder of your organization was a founding member of that, as I understand it. What's it about? What do you all do to convene? What's your purpose?
No, our purpose is, again, to, you know, help provide access to capital in rural America. Yes, our founder, Mike Thomas, started this, 20 years ago or longer. And, we get together with our lender partners and others that are serving rural America, and we meet in DC, and we always have the senior leadership of the USDA rural development there, and we discuss how we can make improvements in things that are working or may not be working, and how do we continue to provide access to capital to rural America. And then we usually have a business of the year that we present an award for, but it's just an opportunity for everyone to come together, talk about strategies and improvements, and meet there in DC with the leadership and make sure we're communicating and make sure we're meeting the needs of rural America.
Well, it's got to, you know, I think about this is such a bipartisan issue because right now we're hearing everyone, all the candidates, you know, we hear rural America was on the map, perhaps in a negative way. And we talk a lot about this in the program as well. There's certain stereotypes and perceptions, but when you think about just rural vitality and how crucial it is. So before we end, I want to ask you, I mean, you said earlier, you grew up in rural, you understand it. And this has been your life work. I like to ask everybody, you know, from a professional perspective, but as well from a personal perspective, why does rural matter so much to you? What's at stake here if we don't provide access to capital for rural? What do you see happening if we don't continue down this path and we don't have the support that we need through our federal government to support development in rural America?
Sure. I mean, like I said, I mean, I grew up there in a very small community, and I don't think most understand rural America and importance of rural America from farming and other aspects of what comes out of rural America. And if we don't help, as I said earlier, you know, out migration continues, these communities continue to struggle, and their great quality of life in rural America, a lot of great people there. And we want to continue to see, I want to continue to see that we help these communities just as urban America has the opportunity. You know, rural America should have the opportunity. And you are correct, rural America has finally gotten a lot of attention politically. But I can say from, you know, the subcommittee that I typically meet with in D.C. that provides the appropriation, there is a good bipartisan work going on there, so that's encouraging of the work they're doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have to support rural America, and the USDA Rural Development meets those needs and goals that the Secretary has laid out for us to provide that access to capital, and I'm happy to, you know, say that we're doing that every day. And, you know, I'm constantly on the go helping and meeting with different communities as to how we can help. But it is important. And I think the work that you're doing through these podcasts and the word that we can get out, that the USDA community facilities out there for these communities certainly goes a long ways.
Thomas Kimsey, President and CEO of Thomas USAF Group. We really, really appreciate your work. I mentioned to you when we chatted before the show, I did a keynote at a major rural health conference last week. And what I see, your organization working with USDA lenders, for example, you represent hope. And sometimes that's, you know, a lot of rural communities are feeling hopeless because of this, some of the issues that we talked about. So we really do appreciate all the work that you're doing to help make rural America stronger and more viable, and investing in them and for the passion that you have for rural. So thank you so much for that, and to your team. And really interested in the National Rural Lenders Roundtable. We'll keep our eye on that if you want to report back to us and let us know what some of the outcomes have been. So again, we've been joined today by Thomas Kimsey, President and CEO of Thomas USAF Group. So once again, thank you, Thomas, for joining us today. And at this point, I'd like to acknowledge and thank the Rural Matters Marketing Partners. And today, we are excited to welcome a new marketing partner, Save Your Town. I'd like you to meet Becky McCray and Deb Brown from SaveYour.Town. They work in small towns, teaching them practical steps to a brighter future. They are experts for small towns, not on small towns. Becky and Deb believe that you don't have to change your town to attract other people. You value all the people who are here now, creating the future of your town together. It's nothing short of a revolution in how to build your town together. You have everything you need. You are creating the community you want, one small step at a time. Start now at ideafriendly.com. where you can get your own poster to share these practical ideals and start your own idea-friendly revolution. That's ideafriendly.com. Thanks goes out to our marketing partners also, which includes the Center for Rural Affairs, Community Hospital Corporation, Foundation for Rural Service, the Journal of Research and Rural Education, Learning Blade, and CTA, the Rural Broadband Association, the National Rural Education Association, the National Rural Health Association, and Ohio Small and Rural Collaborative, as well as AASA, the School Superintendents Association, and Rural Assembly. All of these marketing partners are so essential to Rural Matters in helping us to make this even a more powerful forum for the discussion of the issues affecting rural communities today. Now, if you would like more information on rural issues or to suggest a guest or a topic, just email us at ruralmatterspodcast@gmail.com. Of course, as always, we appreciate your feedback, and we would love for you to rate this podcast on iTunes and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Rural Matters is produced by Michael Levin Epstein and Susan Semples. I want to thank them personally for all their support and help. And of course, to all of you, thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you again next time on Rural Matters.